Welcome to Nothing to Fear, a weekly horror movie podcast. Each week on the show, we pick a different horror movie around some sort of random theme that I come up with, and we talk all about it. My name is Billy Schultz. I run the show, and every week I'm joined in discussion by my two great friends, Alex Wan and Luke Mason. And you know what? I'm not even going to pretend. We're recording this just after we finish recording, because when you hear this episode, I will be in Colorado, and I won't have time for podcasting. So, hello again to you two wonderful chaps. How is your Sunday continuing? Luke?
Oh my god, it's so cold this week.
Yeah.
It's like the polar vortex came.
No.
And it's like in the sub 20s and 30s, I believe.
Oh, it's so cold.
So cold. Oh no, I hope my pipes hold.
Alex, don't. What are you doing?
I think your pipes will be fine, Alex. It's not your pipes that have been the issue.
Yeah.
That's true.
It's
been
condo
everyone
living
around you's pipes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's not looking a week ahead. That's current day today.
Of course. Right.
Nothing has happened.
Nothing has happened. It's good. It's always nice to see you. You make me laugh all the time. Luke, how are you doing?
Good. Always good. Not hungover.
Oh, an unlikely prediction.
I know. Yeah, that's not on the bingo card. I guess it would be if it's less likely to happen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fair. No, there's both options on the bingo card, right?
It's easy bingo. That's a bingo.
Or you don't get it, yeah.
Yeah. Either the next thing I say will be a tautology, or it will not.
Well, you heard it here first, folks.
That's right. Yeah, awesome. No, it's good. It's still the same day as a previous recording, so I don't know what I will be like next Sunday when we record. Or we're not even recording next Sunday, so in 2 weeks. No. But I'm sure it will be good. Weeks. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking.
Always, 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 always. Like I said, I'm not in the country when you hear this. So I don't have any horror movie news. So if anything groundbreaking happened, maybe Cocaine Bear premiered and it made $1 billion at the box office. It's the highest grossing movie of all time. I don't know. Could happen. Yep. Maybe Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey is getting its own cinematic universe because of the reception to that movie. And maybe, you know, I don't know. Maybe there's some bombshell revelation for Scream 6 that happens weeks before the release. But I don't know, because we are recording this in the middle of February, the way God intended. So, yeah. It's great to be here. We're going to talk about a movie, and we're going to talk about Alex's pick for second pick for Revisitation Month, Evil Dead. And we'll get into that. So, Alex, what movie did we watch this week for the show?
So for a Revisitation Month, or is that what it's called? What it's officially called? Revisitation?
Yeah. Revisitation Month.
I once revisited my grandma in the home. No, I actually didn't. She was never there. For Revisitation Month.
A very Shyamalan-esque twist.
I didn't see it coming.
Yeah, so for this week, I picked Evil Dead, the 2013 reimagining. Yeah, that's what I chose. Why did I choose it? No particular reason. I was just looking through the catalog, and as I was telling you before Luke got here, there wasn't very much I wanted to revisitation. And I noticed that there is a new Evil Dead coming out this year.
Evil Dead Rise.
Yeah, and I was like, you know what? Let's give this franchise another shot, because I think I didn't like the first one. I really didn't like the third one. And I thought the second one was okay, if I remember correctly. But that was so long ago.
That was like in our first 10 episodes. Like, yeah. That was right at the start of the show.
That's back when you were still like, let's do franchises all at once.
I'm glad I didn't stick to that.
And then to this day, we still do that. Remember with Annabelle?
Oh, yeah.
That was all of our faults.
I didn't pick it for any particular reason, just because why not? Yeah. And
just have a see. Yeah.
Yeah. There was a new one coming out this year. So, yeah.
Yeah. I also felt the same way about you. Like, the first one, I was kind of like, what? People love this franchise. I don't understand it. The second one I liked a bit more because it was very zany and goofy. And then I really didn't like Army of Darkness. And I know that there's a ton of people in the world that love Army of Darkness. Come at me, I guess, but it just wasn't for me. So
I bet if I watched it when I was younger, I would have liked it more.
Yeah, it feels like there's a lot of, you know, baked in nostalgia with these things. Like if you watch it at the right time, it holds a special place. And that wasn't for me. But yeah, I knew that this movie was like a little bit more this, like the whole premise was a detox for someone who's like addicted to drugs. And hey, howdy, here are the Deadites. So that was really all I knew going in. And then I watched it. But Luke, did you have any special knowledge about this one before?
No, I didn't. I didn't know anything about this movie going in, but it turns out it didn't matter because I actually did know everything about it going in.
Yeah, yeah.
Post thoughts, but
sounds like we'll save it for the trailer.
I didn't. I mean, I never was a fan of Evil Dead, even like from the earlier ones growing up. I mean, obviously they came out before I was born, or two of them, I think. Mm-hmm. So. But they were just never part of my childhood nostalgia in any way. So I only watched them for the first time. So, yeah, I think these movies probably on this podcast suffer from the fact that we're watching them for the first time as adults and getting that adult eye in them without anything else. So,
yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think I'm looking forward to the discussion. But before we go into that... DoesTheDogDie.com, trigger warnings. Yes, all of them. Basically, just everything. There's like everything from dead animals to body mutilation to blood dismemberment, being burned alive, being buried alive, vomit, body horror. It's gross. The biggest triggers of this movie are disgusting. If you're sensitive around talks about like drug use and withdrawal symptoms and stuff like that, there's a little bit in there. But mostly this movie relies on splashing as much blood on the screen as possible, and they do. So let's hear the trailer, and then we'll hear Alex's wonderful synopsis.
David, please, please, you have to get me out of here.
Leave this book alone.
No. You don't understand. There was something in the woods. And I think it's in here with us.
Tonight. I read a passage from that book. I released something evil.
Evil Dead is a 2013 American supernatural horror film directed by Fede Alvarez in his directorial debut, who co-wrote the screenplay with Rodo Sayagues? Dubbed as a reimagining of The Evil Dead from 1981, the film is the fourth installment of the Evil Dead series. It stars Jane Levy, Shiloh Fernandez, Lou Taylor Pucci, Jessica Lucas, and Elizabeth Blackmore. The story follows a group of five people under attack by a supernatural entity in a remote cabin in the woods.
Yes, and Fede Alvarez, who directed this, this was his first one, but he also did Don't Breathe, which we... have covered on this podcast, so that's where we know him from. And this movie cost $17 million to make, and it has made $99 million at the worldwide box office. It holds a 63% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes and a 6.5 on IMDb. And the tagline of this film was, quote, "The most terrifying film you will ever experience." So Alex, was this the most terrifying film you've ever experienced?
No, but this was definitely like top five grossest movies I've ever watched. This was just like the whole time I was watching it, I kept saying ew or gross and like why. Yeah. It was very, very gross. And I mean, it was effective because I just felt so uncomfortable the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was not the most terrifying film. If I guess it would be the most terrifying film if disgust was tied into the Venn diagram of terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was just incredibly, incredibly sick to watch. Yeah.
Agreed. Agreed. There was a lot of times when I was covering my face and just like, no, I don't want to see what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, what was your initial take? Did you like it? Did you hate it? Did you indifferent it?
Yeah, I was pretty indifferent on it. Yeah, like Luke said earlier, once this film was pretty much underway, I was like, I know exactly what's happening in this movie. Like, I think reimagining is the perfect way to describe this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you watched Evil Dead before, it's almost the identical movie if they decided to make it from goofy zany to modern, gritty, and
yeah,
serious. Did that improve the experience? Not really. Did it make it worse? Also not really. It was just a different way to look at this story. And mm-hmm. I think if you're the kind of person that enjoys body horror and being grossed out, then this is a very entertaining movie. And if you're someone like me that's not super entertained by that and is already familiar with the Evil Dead story, there's really nothing new or interesting about it.
Mm-hmm. This movie, I went into it with the best of like, okay, Evil Dead movie, let's see what the reboot looks like. I know that people have said some things about the original Evil Dead that they wish they could have changed, most notably the like tree scene with Mia's character in this one, and I can't remember her name from the original, but like there's like a very graphic sexual assault via plant, and I was like, okay, maybe they did something different with it this time. Nope. Almost worse. And this movie, like, it started with a bunch of like dead cats being hung up on the ceiling of somewhere, and I was like, ooh, don't love seeing dead pets. And then by the time the dog dies, because listener, the dog does die, I was like, oh, okay. I am not on this movie side anymore. And so then I still had an hour of movie to watch. But everything I have to say about this movie is not all negative, I will say that. And I'll get into it later, but I want to hear Luke's initial salvo. So, Luke Mason, you know the Evil Dead now. You're so caught up.
Yeah, I think in comparison to the original three, this one is most similar to the first one, both in plot and tone. I think it is better than Army of Darkness and worse than Evil Dead 2 and about the same as Evil Dead. But really, it's kind of in this category of, there are things that are not to my taste that I can look at and appreciate or understand why other people like them. Like, for example, heavy metal music. I don't really like heavy metal music, but I get what other people like about it. But I just don't get these movies. I don't get what other people like about them. Because it honestly is, like, there wasn't a single part of this movie that wasn't 100% predictable 30 seconds before it happened. Like, it was the most gratuitous, tropey, straightforward. I could have watched this movie with my eyes closed and told you what was going to happen every step of the way.
Yeah.
And I don't get what other people like about that. I just don't. In a way, and I know that I can because I have other things in culture that I don't like that I get. Like even country music, I get what other people like about that. There's like subcultures and things you can relate to that are understandable. Because even the body horror stuff, fine. There's many body horror movies that I think are superior to this one that are just not straightforwardly gratuitous like this movie is.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm honestly, I don't even hate this movie. I'm just kind of bereft of analysis. I just don't get it.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, especially with the tagline of most terrifying movie you've ever seen, and thinking that, like, you know, we've seen so many horror movies now, we're pushing 150, that I'm trying to think, like, okay, but if I was watching this as like the first five horror movies I'd ever watched, would I be scared by this? Because like we all sort of know what the anatomy of a jump scare looks like and sort of when it's going to happen and what's going to happen. And if somebody's shot with their back to you, oh boy, you better bet when they turn around, it's going to be real scary. And like it's just sort of the fear part of the horror movies. I don't know, it's harder for me to get like triggered into like being scared. Like it was very visually disgusting,
and it came out 2013. Yeah. Right.
Yes.
Yeah, so like we're still, that's still after like Insidious and Conjuring, or like the same year as Conjuring. Insidious and Conjuring are not perfect movies. They are way scarier than this movie is. not even, they're like categorically more scary. So I don't even know what this movie's saying about itself.
the tagline is the most terrifying film you will ever experience. Not the most scary.
Okay, so we're arguing semantics.
Yeah. It's different.
All right. Yeah, I mean, it's a horror movie. It like opens up with a cold open of someone getting set on fire, and you're like, what's that all about? And then, of course, you'll find out later, but, you know, a drone shot of drones flying over the forest with the trees on the top and the sky on the bottom. Oh, no. It's spooky times. Here we go. So, yeah, I don't know. This movie committed a lot of sins for me, where it was like, why is nobody talking to one another? Why is the person who has the most knowledge of what's actually going on and what triggered this not saying anything? And I might as well just talk about it now, but like Eric is one of the characters, and he finds the Book of the Dead, which is not called the Necronomicon. It's called the Necromo Demonto or something. It's like another name. And he's
smarter if it's in Latin, right?
It's smarter if it's in Latin. And he like reads this book, and then scary stuff happens. And then for the next 80% of the movie, he's just like, guys, something terrible is happening. Something really bad is happening. Bad things are happening. Instead of being like, I read the book and this is what happened and maybe we can stop it if we work together. It was just like, I don't know. He made me so mad because I was like, you did it. You did it, Eric. It's your fault.
After they had to bolt cut it open. What do you think? Right? You think it's going to be a safe thing that was fucking barbed wired shut?
It's wrapped in barbed wire. It has the first, like the foreword and the introduction of this book say, like, don't read this book. By the way, if you're reading this book, it's going to kill you. And he's like, okay, page 3. What do we got? Like,
it's not just... even like he's accidentally reading it. Like, he's like, yeah, you know, scribbling
he's
on
doing
his
the
little
rubbing.
Yeah, the pencil rubbing so that he can purposely read it. Yeah.
I didn't begrudge him the rubbing, but you know what I mean.
I think this movie could have really easily solved that, because maybe this is a because demon situation and he's a little bit possessed by touching the book and it's like drawing him to read the book. But you need a sound effect that's like, Eric, read the book. And he's like, you know, show some sort of like force being exerted on him rather than him just like, oh, look what I found. A monster book. Snip, 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 time to read. And it was just like, oh, so I was annoyed at Eric the whole time. Like, he could have said things the whole time. Maybe it's too late. As soon as you touch the book, it's like all finished. But I don't know, Eric. And then he got mad at people for not like believing him or not knowing what was going on. And it's like, well, of course, nobody knows what's going on. You aren't telling them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
B-list Kurt Cobain over here.
B-list Kurt Cobain. And he also seemed like he was not... I was like, why are they friends with this guy? He doesn't want to be there. He seems mad at everybody who's like there to... I guess we should maybe sketch out the plot for people who haven't seen it. Like, Mia, our protagonist, maybe, is like trying to go into drug rehab. And she's doing it at this cabin with her friends as support. And so it's like a detox thing, a cold turkey detox thing. But Eric
is
there.
Which doesn't work,
to be honest,
right? It does. Yeah, like dumb, bad idea. Doesn't work. Actually, go get medical help. Locking yourself in a cabin is not going to help you.
Well, they brought a nurse, so what could have gone wrong?
Yeah, Eric was annoying, but I guess I will take the mantle of being entirely negative about this film, Billy, since you seem to not want to be. to me, all five characters were competing with each other to see who could be the worst. Like, there was no good character. I mean, the dog was the good character, and the dead cats.
Grandpa. Oh, Grandpa.
You know, but like all five of these characters, it's like a crash course in kind of stupid alpha non-communication. They were sounds were coming out of their voices, but there was zero communication between people in this film. Mm-hmm. And I guess that fits the tone of why is any of this happening? But, you know, it almost feels like the film is aware of the fact that no one's really watching it for what they're saying anyway.
Yeah.
But it's like, you can't have a silent film. Like, they got to say something. But all the things that they were chosen to say were just like, no, you didn't say anything. You've said nothing now.
Yeah, it kind of feels like, you know, that the idea behind these types of movies is like you're just really in it to see what kind of gore they have, what kind of kills they have, especially if you know the Evil Dead franchise. You know, it's kind of like, I think this Evil Dead was the movie that I was introduced the term splatter gore to, right? Like a splatter horror film. So it's just like they can't have all the blood hitting the screen at once. So they need to have some sort of dialogue. And so it felt like there was a writer's room where they're like, okay, we can't just have five friends going onto a cabin at the weekend. And then someone said, what if somebody was a drug addict? And they said, great. And then they all went home for the weekend and started filming on Monday. And it was just like, yeah, they tried to give Mia and David this development because they're brother and sister, but that fell flat. I wrote all the names down because I wanted to actually get them all. Olivia was the nurse. She was there to be the nurse. Okay, great. And then Eric, I think, was Olivia's boyfriend. I think that was why he was there. I think they were dating. And then Natalie had the least development at all. Like, I don't think she even said something until she was possessed. She was just David's girlfriend. And so, like, all these characters are so paper thin, and you're like, okay, we're not even going to get a hint of knowing who they are before this happens, because the audience just wants to see the deadites, and I guess they got to see that. But I was like, I wanted more. I wanted more reasons. I wanted more story behind it to have me care about any of them. And when the cabin blew up, because the cabin blows up at the end of this movie, which it's been a minute since we've had a house explode in one of our horror movies, I was so convinced that that was the end of the movie that I started writing down like my little cheat sheet for when the time codes are. And then it went on for another 25 minutes. I was just like, oh, the cabin's blown up. Okay, we're done. Nope. There's a whole second life that Mia has to get going. So
yeah, because when they, like, the book said it needs five souls. So who were the five people that died?
We had the first who died, I guess. Well, Mia was, like, possessed in the forest. Okay. And then she came back. And then Olivia, the nurse, got possessed and cut her face open, which was real gross. And then like, I kept thinking Eric was going to die, like, seven different times. Like, I was like, oh, this is it for Eric. And then, lo and behold, he'd show up again later in the movie. And I was like, this fucking guy's still around, hey? So I think the person who chronologically dies next is Natalie, when she like cuts her arm off with the carving knife and has all the nails in her face. And then Eric
actually dies.
Eric almost dies. And then David goes and buries Mia in the garden as the live burial, which is one of the ways to undo the curse. So she dies. And then he revives her in a very unmedical way with a car battery and a bunch of needles wrapped with a wire. Sure. Mm-hmm. But then they go back into the house, and then Eric and David blows up the house with Eric and him inside of it. So I think because Mia died, that counts as one of the deaths. And then the other four are dead. But then Mia's still alive so that they can have someone fight with the deadites. Mm,
of course. Does Grandpa count as a soul?
Maybe. Depends if you think dogs have souls.
I'm not going to go into that one.
Maybe. Okay, if Grandpa counts, then yeah, they're five plus one.
That was dumb.
I mean, yeah, if there's a surefire way to lose me on a movie, it's like, kill the dog for no reason. I was like, why even have the dog? Don't bring the dog. We don't need to kill poor Grandpa. No. It's too sad.
Yeah, I think this movie was just like a very poorly made flowchart to get from gore scene A to gore scene B. You know, there's nothing that made sense about what any of them were doing. There's nothing interesting about what any of them were doing. It was like, a lot of it was, how can we make a gross movie but show things in this that will excite people that loved, like, the 1981 Evil Dead, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We have the first-person camera swooping through the forest. That makes a return. The chainsaw makes a return. The shotgun makes a return.
She even puts it on her hand, like a chainsaw hand, for a second.
Yeah, when David's driving away with Mia in the car, the river is flowing too much. Like that makes a return.
There was also like a shot. There was like a car all covered in leaves that was parked at the cabin before they got there. There was like there are two cars, like the Jeep and the car they came in, and then there was a third one. And I was like, I didn't see it for long enough to see if it was the car from Evil Dead 1, like, as an homage, but I feel it felt like an Easter egg. It felt like, if you're a fan, you knew this was Ash's car or something.
Yeah. And then Ash shows up at the very end.
Yeah, so you stayed through the credits?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, me too. Did you stay till the very end, Luke?
Absolutely not.
I can almost guarantee no.
And to be honest, yeah, I was kind of, I wasn't even really watching the last 20 minutes. I was just on my phone.
Yeah, same. Well, yeah, like the credits roll, there's a little homage of record, the audio tape player, which is, I think, from the very first movie where they, the professor that has been doing Evil Dead research or whatever is recording it. And then at the very end, it's just a profile shot of Bruce Campbell and he says groovy and looks at the camera. And I was just like,
why?
This is just for the fans, because he has nothing to do with the rest of the movie.
If he could get into that shot, why couldn't he get into the movie?
He was an executive producer on it, so.
Well, and then I guess that, like, maybe that was what kind of got the show started, right? Because the show came out 2014?
I think so. Ash vs. Evil Dead was, it had a few seasons to watch, which I'm not interested in checking out. I used to think, like, maybe I'll check it out. I think it will be good, but I think I'm no. But I did say, since Luke, you are wearing the mantle of most negative on this film, I did say I had some stuff positive to say, and I will say that the gore and the effects were very well done. Everything looked suitably disgusting. The prosthetics, it wasn't really bad, like CG or anything. Like, all that stuff looked disgusting, which was the point. All the, like, nails being shot into people's faces and limbs being removed, that was, I think, where they put the most time and care and attention, and I think it comes across on the screen.
It reminded me of other movies I saw this year. So Olivia, when she cuts her face, that reminded me of Smile. Okay. And then when Natalie's locked in the basement with Mia and she has that box cutter and then she cuts her hand, that was like in Men. Remember?
And she cuts her tongue.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was upsetting. Luke is squirming. What was the grossest effect for you, Luke?
Probably the tongue cut. I don't know. It was just so much of unrealistic kind of gore. I don't think it was as gross as Hellraiser 2, though. I think that's still the grossest movie we've done.
But that one, I think, is going to take a while to unseat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think of all of the practical effects, the one that I think improved the most from the original trilogy is contacts they were able to use for their eyes. The eyes looked good and yellow and scary, but
they look kind of like when Anakin falls to the dark side a little bit.
Yeah, I guess I'm still just kind of like insulated or made numb a bit to that kind of stuff now after so many episodes of horror movies where it's just, you know, rivers of blood and grossness. I'm like, okay, I don't know. It didn't really make a big effect on me because it was totally what should be in the, like, okay. It, you know, it was on the menu, so when the plate showed up, I was like, oh yeah, that's what was ordered.
That's what I ordered. Fair enough. Yeah, I think the tongue cut is one of the most visceral ones because there's like a fine line in horror movies, I think, where if someone is, I think we've talked about it before, but if someone is like pulled into a million pieces, you can't really know how that feels. But I've cut my tongue on stuff and I've nicked my tongue on stuff, and like just doing it a little tiny bit hurts so much. So like it feels more visceral to have someone completely bisect it. Or, I mean, I think that water heater in the cabin, it's not up to code. It's just like a box full of fire somehow that boils water.
How does it instantly boil water that quickly? That was stupid.
Yeah, that's not safe. It's just a box full of fire next to your like water hose or whatever. Yeah, that I was like, ooh, that I know how it feels to get like burned, so that like hurts. But all the stuff where she's carving off her arm with a weird rotating turkey knife, and when she gets her hand pinned under the Jeep and just has to tear her arm off, like, take that, James Franco. What was your excuse?
How long did it take him to do that? 127 hours?
127 hours. She was done in, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah, it took Mia, like, seconds.
Come on. She just pulled real hard. I don't know. It's just gross. And there's not a lot to say about the movie because of how gross and visceral it is. And the plot they propped around the gross parts was, I don't know, it was lacking for me. What did you think about the Chekhov's lullaby that started up in the movie that was definitely going to come back?
I was so annoyed at that scene. I'm like, you've done 99% of the work right now. Just do the extra 1% and just end it all right here. It reminds me of a very real life example of a basketball player on the Philadelphia 76ers named Matisse Thybulle. So he got his first COVID shot and then proceeded not to get his second COVID shot. Okay. And then because of reasons that are his, but are also dumb. And then because he wasn't fully vaccinated, he couldn't play games in certain cities. Oh, and it was so much different than someone that just refused to get vaccinated. It was like, in my mind, it was even dumber than that. Like, you've done half the work, just finish the other half, right?
Yeah.
And then this was even more infuriating. He did 99% of it all. He had locked her in, she was still in the cellar, you know, poured gasoline everywhere, was about to light it, and then you hear a song and it's like, I can't do it anymore. Fuck off, movie.
Yeah, I was just like, just light it, be done. You can win. You no more deadites.
And they still had a gore budget to go through, so they couldn't end the movie there, you know?
Yeah. And I guess, like, they needed that showdown between the thing that rises up out of the ground and Mia, but it was also like, well, Mia, why is Mia our main character when all we're doing is following David around for the whole start of this movie, and then she's just, like, a prop that gets possessed. And then he's like, well, I could finish it, or I could take her out, dig a big hole, and bury her in it. Although it was really funny when she just had the bag on her head, and she had given up the pretense of, like, begging for her life, and she was just like, David, why don't you hate me? I thought that was very funny. Just, like, this sort of nonchalant conversation. Like, you're in a pit with dirt all over you, and there's a bag on your head, and you're just, like, chatting. That was a funny juxtaposition. But yeah, like, why? It didn't make sense. It didn't make sense.
There's we're 100 dozen so movies in to this podcast. I think we can just, like, I don't know. Like, I've come to the realization 65-70% of these movies are, like, there's no rational way to analyze why things happen. It's just, I feel like maybe this is a problem with just the horror genre in general, is the primary reason that people make or want to watch horror movies is to get scared, right? And In some movies, the mechanism to get to the next scare is done really, really well. And then in most of them, it's just, I can't really think of a good way to get there, but we just need to get to the next scare.
Yeah.
And that's like the epitome of this movie, is they don't care about anything that happens in between. They just want to get to the next gross part. So everything is done kind of lazily, like, in terms of the plot and story and the characters and the rationale and the reasoning and the decision-making. It's really lazy. It doesn't make any sense, but that's not the point of the movie. The point of the movie is to be grossed out and to watch the sick stuff happen, which is why this movie was made, right? There's no other reason.
I think it's like, we are not the audience for this movie. We are not the people who loved Evil Dead when we were younger or from the past or thought it was groundbreaking. And, you know, some people have to take the negative side on a debate, and, like, I will happily just sort of, like, say I don't get why people like Evil Dead. I think Bruce Campbell is a very charismatic actor, and he's made a career out of this because people like it, but, you know, I don't care that he was in it. I don't care that it was star making. If it was revolutionary at the time, it's not anymore. And it feels like this movie was made explicitly for people who liked Evil Dead or wanted to get into Evil Dead or had the disposition to like these types of movies. And that's fine. Like, I don't have to like every movie. Not every movie is made for me or has to be made for me. And that's totally, totally fine. But it's just kind of sucks when you're like, okay, I've heard people talk highly about this movie. And then you're just like, people are talking highly about this movie? So
that's how I feel about Breaking Bad.
It's the power of reputation. So there's a great line from Mark Twain, among the hundreds of his great lines, where he says, if you give a man a reputation as an early riser, he can sleep till noon. And Evil Dead somehow got a reputation as movies worth watching. So it doesn't matter how bad they are, because the reputation is that they're fun or good or worth it. And honestly, and a little bit more poignantly, I think this same phenomenon has actually happened to Star Wars, where as long as you put the name Star Wars on it, you can make as shitty a movie as any movie Rian Johnson wants to make about Star Wars or any show, right? It doesn't matter how bad the content is as long as the label is on it. And that's because...
I'm breaking the cycle here. I'm not watching Andor.
Oh, okay. Well, that's funny because Andor is actually one of the good Star Wars.
I was so bored after the first episode.
So anyway, obviously Star Wars is different than Evil Dead because the genesis of Star Wars is actually quite good. And I just don't feel that happened with Evil Dead. But I just, yeah, it's like, oh, a new Evil Dead. Oh, Bruce Campbell. Oh, Ash. And it's all this kind of like secondary or even tertiary phenomenon of the film. And it's like kind of cultural place versus like any merit it had in the first place. And I think that's another, I mean, really, these great writers in history who are making these pithy observations about human nature are actually just really insightful folk psychologists about the way our brains work.
Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, this movie's not for us. I was not overly wowed by it. I could admire the craftsmanship in the gore as being well done, if, like, very disgusting.
Really? It looked pretty rare to me.
That's why I love you, Alex. You always got a little jab in there.
It happened to Eric's face with the needle.
This movie also makes it seem deceptively easy to just cut through bones or like remove bones.
So easy.
You know, so I just easy. Don't think it's that easy. I think it'd be a lot messier.
Cut through
now.
Things. Well, we'll have to ask Steve from Fresh. He seems like he would know. I actually made a note about how Eric still being alive over and over again reminded me of Danny McBride's character from Pineapple Express because he's just like always like blown up. I think he gets hit by a car at one point.
Yeah.
And then he's like falling asleep at the diner. And they're like, well, buddy, wake up. Mm-hmm. Stay with us.
We should get you to the hospital.
Yeah, he's funny. Yeah.
So that was a good thing that Evil Dead had going for it. It made me think of Pineapple Express, which I enjoyed watching when it came out. I got nothing else really.
Yeah, me neither.
No final. Why was she wearing? Why did he have to put her in a red dress to bury her? I don't know. It's so dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Evil Dead fans. If you like it, maybe give this episode a miss. But
you know, we actually gave it a good college try. We gave it 4 movies.
We really did.
That's 4
we
years.
We really did.
So
yeah, I was on board after Evil Dead 2. I really liked the zaniness and silliness of Evil Dead 2. I thought that was the right tone for something like this. This movie, no. And Evil Dead Rise, I'm not interested in seeing it when it comes out. So I will listen to other podcasts recap it and go, ah, okay. But
well, that's,
you know,
still
maybe
even more than I'm willing to do.
Yeah. So I think with that being said, if we want to do a scariest / grossest part of the movie, we will. Alex, you pick this one, so you get to start us off.
I was like never scared in this movie. I was just immensely grossed out.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, grossest part of the movie was probably the tongue cut.
Yeah, same.
Didn't
for me.
Didn't
I
like
agree.
That.
Just, I agree.
Yeah. I agree.
And all right. And in terms of like scare, if someone is listening to this and you got this far, kudos to you. Great job. And you've never seen the horror movies. I think this would be scary for people who haven't watched 140 horror movies in 2 years or 3 years. Like, I think that if you're not an avid horror movie watcher, this does have a lot of jump scares that are quite frightening and scenes that are shocking. So don't let this movie's not scary be the only guide you listen to, because I think it could be scary for a lot of people. But we got to rate it out of something. And we got to give it our rating, our patented Nothing to Fear rating. So, Alex.
I'm going to give it... Okay, well, we're going to rate it out of 5... I don't even know. It's just so... Okay, you know what? We are going to rate it out of 5... There are only 2 of them, but we're going to rate it out of 5 well-meaning hillbillies that kidnap people in running away from them in the woods. Because, you know, you shouldn't kidnap people, but...
That's right.
And they seemed a little bit malicious and scary at first, but the reality was they were just trying to destroy evil.
They were just trying to destroy evil.
Yeah.
That's right. I totally forgot there's like a kidnap scene with like Tucker and Dale.
The two of you have referenced several scenes in this movie that I do not remember.
This is literally
which,
the start of the movie.
Which means that I was very much not paying attention to this film.
Yeah. Yeah, I did not care for this movie at all. If you're an Evil Dead fan, it's a different kind of... It's the same story with like going kind of the other direction instead of zany and like really campy, goofy kind of blood and guts. It's like incredibly visceral, disgusting, makes you want to puke gore. So I can maybe see that there's an audience that enjoys this, if especially if they have a nostalgia of the original Evil Dead, but it wasn't for me. Didn't care for it. I can maybe appreciate the effects because they were so gross. So well done to those people. And, you know, there were some things that gave me some nostalgia, like the first person thing flying through the woods.
The zoomy camera.
Yeah, I was like, hey, that makes a return. That's exciting. But that was mostly at the start of the movie before I was just grossed out. So I'm going to give this 1.5 well-meaning kidnapping hillbillies out of 5.
1.5. All right. I think I am also going to mark this one pretty low. And I don't know why I feel like more apologetic for this mark, where there's other movies where I'm gleefully giving it low marks that people really like, because everyone likes different things. But for me, this is a 1 out of 5. Just, I don't get it. Enjoy, Evil Dead fans. It's all yours. I will not talk about Evil Dead anymore after this. So enjoy it. Talk about it. Love it. Cherish it. It's just not for me. 1 out of 5.
Yeah, I think this movie's 100% devoid of merit. The only reason it's not getting the lowest score of the lowest movies we've done is that it's slightly less obnoxious than the worst movies we've ever done. So I'm going to give this a 0.5 well-meaning hillbillies.
0.5
out of 5 well-meaning hillbillies.
All right. 0.5. Ratings in. This got to be one of the bottom 10, I think. But hey, that's all right, because it's time to cheer something. So let's turn this around, end this show on a little bit of a positive. Alex Wan, what are you cheering?
I'm cheering a show that I'm watching. I'm watching The Rehearsal, and it's the HBO one with Nathan Fielder, and it is the fucking funniest thing I've ever seen. And it's so heartfelt, but also like crazy and funny, and just, I can't believe someone would do that. And it's so meta, and it's so like self-referential, and it's just so hard to explain, but I'm having so much fun with it. I watched an episode of it before we started recording today. I actually got up extra early to watch it because it's been on my mind, and I have 2 episodes left, and they got renewed for a second season. So
nice.
I'm just The Rehearsal.
So I've heard people talk very highly about The Rehearsal, but like I've never seen it. So what kind of is, I mean, you just said the premise is hard to explain, but can you give us a 30-second?
Okay, essentially, the premise is Nathan Fielder finds people that want to experience something or have, like, they want to experience something, but they don't know, that they're nervous about it. And it can range anywhere from having a conversation with a friend and telling them that you've been lying to them for the past decade about having a master's degree when you don't actually have one, to deciding whether or not you want to be a parent and raise a child.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So essentially, he creates these sets, like one-to-one ratio sets, and hires actors to play the real scenario over and over again so that the person has practice, aka rehearsing, this experience. But it just gets crazier and crazier because, so Nathan, he like, there's this one episode where he has this teaching class and he's like teaching these actors that he hires to play these other people. And then he's like, well, I need to get into the head of my actors that I'm teaching the class to. So he hires more actors to replay that class that he taught, and he takes the place of one of those actors in the first class. And someone else is playing him. It's just like, it's hard to explain. The premise is crazy, but it's very entertaining, and I'm having a lot of fun with it.
I love that. That's great. Check it out on HBO Max, or Crave, I guess, in Canada.
Yeah.
Pretty simple cheer, but the Sunday evening trivia host was on vacation for the previous 2 weeks, and he's back today, so we are going back to trivia.
Woohoo! More trivia. Tarzan's Entopod.
Hey,
rides again.
We all have to have our trivial pursuits.
Ah, very nice. My cheer is one of personal accomplishment, and that is, by the time this episode comes out, I will have crossed the 200 kilometers of running in the year. So I will have run more than 200 kilometers so far this year. I have got a very lofty goal for the end of the year.
What's the goal?
It's 2023 kilometers in 2023. That's my goal. Which amounts
to a kilometer a year. It's so easy.
A kilometer a year?
Yeah. 1 kilometer a year. So
can you break?
Oh,
how
man.
Many? Okay.
I'm so behind.
How many meters per month is that? Can you break that down, please?
1,000 divided by 12.
I think so easy. There's like a Michael Scott joke there somewhere.
Yeah, it's like 980, 100. I don't know, whatever. But yeah, so I'm trying to go there. It's about the exact amount is 5.54 kilometers a day, and I try to go over that. I missed a couple days, but I still went running. I went running when it was minus 35 out, and I went for a one mile run, and I came back inside because I was afraid of getting cold. And then I cut off my run short yesterday because I got food poisoning shortly thereafter, and it was bad. But 200 kilometers.
Does treadmill running count?
Treadmill running does count, but I do not have a treadmill, so I gotta go out of doors. And big shout out to Danica for like kind of being a running inspo, because she's done that, and we talk about running sometimes. So,
woo. She's already done 2023 kilometers in 2023.
She did 2022 in 2022 last year, I think she did. Yeah.
Okay.
So she had slightly less to run every day than I did.
sounds lazy to me, honestly.
Hey, she ran a marathon last year. I cannot say one word about it.
Yeah, well, I drove around all the places.
Woo! There you go. You play lots of sports. Anyway, so that'll be it for the week and the month. Revisitation month is over. We've revisited some franchises. We're going to leave some in the past, and we might visit some other ones later on. But before we do that, I got to pick a new theme. And I will say, largely for March, I want to do movies that have some sort of forest component in them. But I am not picking a forest movie for my first pick in March, because I want to catch this movie on Shudder before my monthly pass runs out. I think it runs out in a week. So next week, we are going to be watching the brand new movie to Shudder called Skinamarink, which is making all sorts of waves online and at the box office, and I can't wait.
So is that something we can do now? If we don't want to watch a movie related to the theme, we don't have to.
I don't care. You can pick whatever you want.
Okay. I like that. We're going forward with that.
Okay. I actually watched that movie yesterday.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, no spoilers. Save it for the pod, Luke.
It's kind of an impossible movie to spoil.
Okay. Well. I will talk about it. We'll talk about it next week. Luke, you may not watch it if you don't want to.
Wait, when you say it's impossible to spoil, does that mean it's very predictable?
Well, if you watch the trailer, you know what the movie's about.
Yeah, okay. No. I have not watched the trailer, but I know the premise.
It's another one of those movies where it's like almost totally about how the shots of the film, not the plot of it.
Okay, well, we'll find stuff to talk about. I'm excited to watch it. Yeah, so I will wish everyone out there in listener land a good day. Goodbye to you, Alex.
Bye.
Bye, Luke.
See ya.
Take care. And remember, folks, they're just movies. There's nothing to fear. Thank you for listening to Nothing to Fear. Leave a rating and a review wherever you got this podcast. Every little rating helps us move up in the charts and helps more people find us and makes us feel good and lets us know we're doing a good job. You can also follow the show on social media. We have an Instagram. It is Nothing to Fear Podcast on Instagram. We're also on Mastodon. Go to @ntfpod@horrorhub.club to check out what we're doing on there. If you would like to support the show financially, you can head over to patreon.com/nothingtofear to give a little bit to the show and help us keep renting movies, getting equipment, and just generally making the show. We really appreciate everyone who gives. Once you've listened to our show, you can also check out what Luke is up to. He does two other podcasts called Really True Fiction and Liberal Soul. And he also co-hosts a radio show called Full Spectrum Cinema on Kootenai Co-op Radio. Check out those discussions on movies. They're a good, fun time. Alex can be found at One Song a Day on Instagram, where he puts a new song up every day. And there's an ever-growing Spotify playlist for you to check out. Once again, we love you so much. Thank you forever, forever, ever. And see you next time.
Well, actually, it would have come at the very end of this episode. It's like, I never had a grandma in a home at all. Whoa.
Oh my god!
Okay, well, you're going to edit this out. You're going to put it at the very end, right?
Okay, all right, I will.